we're going to start off today with Austin Frerich. Now, Austin is a guy we had on before. He's an expert in when it comes to agricultural, financial agricultural, the economy of agriculture, and really has his finger on the pulse of what is happening out in America right now. He's got a brand new book out there, and it's called Barron's, Money, Power, and the Corruption of America's Food Industry. He's kind enough today to talk to us a little bit about the book as well as the ag sector itself. Austin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. Now, I want to start off because we had you on, I'm guessing about a year and a half ago. We talked about the ag sector because I spent a bit of time in Iowa and I got to see the ag community straightforward. And it was pretty clear, at least to me, where a lot of these problems, there are problems within the ag sector, which were really hurting the day-to-day farmer out there. If I could just start off with your thought right now on the status of the agricultural sector in regards to the working farmer in America today.
The family farmer is almost effectively dead. We see massive consolidation, industrialization of that space. I view rural America at this point as extraction colonies. It's producing the most wealth it's ever produced, but none of that money is staying in these communities. And we shouldn't be surprised that, you know, strongman right-wing politics is filling that void. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. There was a story this weekend in the Star Tribune and talked about basically it's the water supplies, which is a major crisis here in Minnesota and a lot of places in regards to nitrates from fertilizer getting into the water supplies. And there is this moment, and I'm going to talk about this coming up in the 4 o'clock hour as well, but there's a moment within this article where he knows exactly where the problem's coming from, but yet doesn't want to address the fact that it's the fertilizers, it's the nitrates. It's kind of one of those things, how dare the Democrats try to regulate fertilizers? You're taking away our life, our community, our livelihood. On the other side, it's, why is the Democrats allowing our water system to get polluted? You're taking away our life, our quality of life, sort of thing. It's not difficult to see. I was seeing this 20 years ago. I could see where the problem was happening in rural America. Why do you feel so many farmers, so many people that still live there fail to just want to, you know, to see what's going on? We can go with the sugar beet farmers and the whole big, what was it, Crystal Sugar up in the Red River Valley, and when that whole thing went down. We all see where the problem is. Why do you think the rural communities don't want to address it?
Well, let me first of all start off by saying, I mean, you guys have one of the best state legislator members on this issue of fertilizer, Rick Hansen.
Oh, yes.
Who chaired your House committee on this stuff, is just leading the cause on this. But, I mean, to your point about what's not being mentioned, let's start with, I was shocked when I started this book that the largest private company in America is Cargill, your hometown hero.
Yes.
I mean, they are bigger than the Koch brothers. I mean, they are... I compare the Cargill empire to the closest example we have to Standard Oil today in America. They own the middle. They're all about transporting grain. And so they want to produce as much grain and process as much grain as possible. So anything that limits on that, they don't like. And they're incredibly coy and Machiavellian in how they exercise power. They never do things overtly. They use third parties. They give money to organizations who do their bidding. Mm-hmm. But to your question over why is this issue not resonating in rural America is, I mean, I think to me it reflects more that the state of media. I mean, so much of the newspapers that are left in America are these elite white urban papers. And so many of these papers that used to tell these stories in rural communities that have just been hollowed out. I mean, the Des Moines Register used to have an entire agriculture section. And I was able to do a lot of research in my book because of that incredible reporting. That's all gone. I mean, private equity owns that paper now. They've gutted it. And so what you have is like this whole ecosystem financed by the robber barons, the news ecosystem. And so which is just like... It almost is like kind of reminds me of like Appalachia, you know, in the 19th century, where like the coal press is financing coal news. I mean, that to me is like the biggest hindrance here.
And I can tell you, I mean, my thesis paper for my degree was on agricultural radio, which for the most part doesn't even exist anymore. It makes me sad because there was real information and real news there, but the system itself, and we can talk about this in a lot of different ways, but for large swaths of this country, the farmer grew the crops, they took it to the local co-op, it went to market, they sold it, kind of, and the money came back here. That entire system is just gone now, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, like, totally. It is, I mean, most, there's a whole undercurrent in my book is what is a farmer? You know, a lot of these barons pretend to be farmers, but like, for example, my dairy baron, he created milk called Fairlife. He secretly lives at the Ritz-Carlton in Puerto Rico to likely evade paying capital income taxes. And the dirty secret is it's mostly undocumented men who are the real farmers here.
The you talk about the I think that's one of the under the parts of your book which I think is the untold part here is you're talking about these barons, these people of, you know, masters of industry that control the agricultural side, but what you're also saying is, by the way, this is why large swaths of rural America are desolate and destitute right now. It's not Democrats in state capitals writing legislation. It's the corporate ag system that is basically gutted. And in part, well, I shouldn't say it's not completely. I mean, there's a lot of political bills that have been passed that have been utilized and tax breaks that have been utilized. But the reality is these are corporations whose goal is not to promote farming for anyone else. It's basically them capturing as much of the money from these farmers as possible and putting it in their pocket.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's why I really wanted to use this Robert Barron framework to show people we're at another gilded age. We've been here before. And never forget, Matt, I mean, the goal of any corporation is monopoly. Mm-hmm. That's where profits are. So you will always have this fundamental tension between government not wanting concentrated markets and business wanting them. And to me, I almost view this as cyclical, where like, oh, these laissez-faire moments just happen. They run themselves into the ground. And the question now is, where do we go from here? What should the future of the American food system be once we put the second gilded age to rest?
Let's get into a little bit of the book. I don't want to share too much because I want people to go buy the book for sure. You brought up Cargill. Have you seen the whole thing with Kathy Cargill?
I think it's so funny. All my friends up in Minnesota keep sending me the little updates, like the whole Cheerio protest and everything.
Oh, gosh. As you talk about it, it's like these are not farmers. Sure, they cosplay farmers. They'll bring out a wagon with some pumpkins on it, throw some jeans on and a flannel shirt, and pose for some photos to make it look like they're a farmer. These guys aren't farmers. She's basically trying to buy up the whole part of Duluth and turn it into something, and then when people call her out, she really does throw what I would describe as the wealthy person temper tantrum. And yeah, I'm taking my toys and going home.
Didn't she call like $700,000 homes trash or something? Like, it just goes to show you how disconnected they are from us. And what I had fun doing this book is, let me first start by saying, I didn't want to be the last of the rich and famous. I wanted to use these Robert Barons to tell bigger structural stories. But at the same time, I wanted to change up the story. So, like, my hog baron is who I open with. He, to me, is like trashy new Florida money, whereas Cargill historically was aristocratic money. And that's what's wild about this Duluth thing is the family has been so guarded for so long that you really didn't know who they were. And this is the first time. Not only are they in the news, but it's like, it's really trashy.
Yeah. Oh, I've got to imagine someone with the family has pulled her aside and is like, okay, no. This is not our brand. This is not a real Housewives of Duluth here. We're not doing this. But I don't know. We do have to understand, though, and this is one of the things, I kind of joked about it when I said, oh, they do their little photo ops with farms. Part of their entire image is to portray themselves as just a salt of the earth, you know, farmer that is just no different than any other farmer on the planet. And the reality is, as you described, these are corporations masquerading as farmers, and it's almost kind of hard to comprehend how this has been so successful for them.
Oh, totally. I mean, I once in a while in the book, when you read it, you'll see a few little sassy lines I kept in. But the one, I mean, go back to the dairy guy. He had this whole episode of Dirty Jobs on him. And, like, you know, it looks like, you know, he looks like a farmer. He's doing all this thing with Mike Rowe. And you just, once you undercover, you unpack it, you realize he's not doing the work. Also, he sells a narrative that he's sustainable. His operation is the most unsustainable model of production possible for dairy. But then on top of it, like, you just realize Mike Rowe used to be a QVC host. And I grew up watching QVC. My grandma loves it. And I was like, oh, he just sold this Robert Barron's narrative like he used to sell products on QVC. He's just a corporate hack. That's mm-hmm. all he is.
You talk about Driscoll's, the fruit guys, and some of the things you talk about. I thought this was a local company. I swear to God, when I was like, oh my God, this is not a local company. This is the your fruit baron These guys are a massive worldwide. Well, they're not a farmer at all. They're just a company, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, they are. Of all my barons in my book, they're the ones that shock people the most. Because, like, Walmart's my grocery baron. That doesn't really shock anyone that Walmart's exploitive. But Driscoll's does. And Driscoll's is what their public image is and what they are two different things. I mean, like, the brothers have written op-eds in the Washington Post with the former governor of California, Jerry Brown. They seem incredibly, kind of like classic California liberals. And then you unpack their empire, and it's like, oh, their whole production model is like this modern-day version of sharecropping from the South.
Wow.
Where they own the IP of the berry, they contract out the production to other growers who move production offshore so they can exploit labor, exploit environmental things, and then Driscoll's handles the marketing of it. Honestly, it's no different than Silicon Valley, you know, where they own the IP and then they have it, you know, things made in other countries.
Mm. What's interesting is I live in town Hopkins, and it's got the Raspberry Festival. At one point, it was Raspberry Farmers. And it's just the industry as we know it that is sold to us, this, you know, like I said, salt of the earth industry, it's gone. It's gone completely.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, the key part here is the robber baron, the people doing it right aren't playing on a level playing field.
Yeah.
So that's the thing is, like, those local raspberry growers that used to be there, first of all, they're competing against a company that's exploiting labor, exploiting children. And then on top of it, like, the Farm Bill has really just pushed all the produce offshore in America. Anything that's labor-intensive has moved offshore because, you know, so much subsidy. The Farm Bill is now designed to overproduce.
Well, I'll tell you what, Austin, if I can, let me step in here. Let's take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to let you finish on this and then get into a few other issues. Austin Frerich is joining us. The book is Barrons. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's the Matt McNeil Show on a Monday. Austin Frerich is joining us, an expert in agricultural antitrust policy. Also, I should mention he's a fellow of the Thurman Arnold Project at Yale University. And the book out right now is Barrons, Money, Power, and the Corruption of America's Food Industry from Austin Frerich. And Austin, you were talking about fruit farmers. And this is something that used to be everywhere. There used to be fruit farmers everywhere. And that just that this has been wiped out by these barons.
I kid you not, all the apple orchards I grew up with disappeared in my hometown.
Yeah.
And you're like, what happened? Like, it wasn't like they became subdivisions. It was they're planted with corn. And then I started digging into the Farm Bill. And the history of the Farm Bill is, comes out of the Dust Bowl, markets oversupplied, had to find a sweet spot. And the original Farm Bill was very much like Goldilocks, you know, where you get a little subsidies, but then you take land out of production. And there was limits. And it was very much kind of like a family farm model. And I tell this history where Cargill didn't like that. The Cargill family, I mean, they want to process and move as much grain as possible. So the family thought FDR was evil, you know, all this kind of stuff. So they hated it from day one, and they worked over decades to basically warp and corrupt the Farm Bill to, I really focus on that 1996 Farm Bill, what I call the Wall Street Farm Bill. For now, the Farm Bill is designed to overproduce a few things at the expense of everything else. So you can get a ton of subsidies. The cap is way raised. The coupling has been disconnected. The conservation program is pretty much corrupted. Mm-hmm. You can build an industrial hog facility and get conservation money for a hog manure lagoon. And then crop insurance is basically a price guarantee. So prices get so low, you're paid. 60% of the premiums are paid by the taxpayer. And, like, for example, Bill Gates is one of the largest owners of farmland in America, so he can get unlimited crop insurance if he wants. And so what you realize is what this does is it crowds out everything else. So all those people doing raspberries in your community, you know, the incentive now is for them to do corn.
Mm-hmm. At what point, and by the way, you're interesting. You've made my eyebrows raise when you say the Cargill family did not like FDR. I did not know that. That's an interesting, I'll have to read up on that a little bit more. But, you know, as we are today, I mean, I guess what does it take? I mean, clearly the politicians are terrified of going and readdressing this, even though we see farm subsidies. There's 8 farm subsidies going to one house. Everyone's getting 6 figures. And it's, you know, and there's a problem there. That's clearly this is welfare for the wealthy, and it is an incredibly large problem. The people that really need it get a pittance, and then the wealthy people that really benefit from them act like this is benevolent. But it's not going to get addressed. I mean, there comes the question, and I go back to that thing about the water in southeastern Minnesota and whether or not and the nitrates there. Does it have to take that where literally life itself is being threatened? You're getting cancer, you're getting this, and yet you still are going to have people that are arguing, no, we shouldn't change anything. But, I mean, is that what it's going to take? I mean, is it getting so bad now in rural America that they might wake up to the reality that the corporate ag structure is what's really killing small-town America?
I mean, keep in mind, I mean, Iowa's a canary in the coal mine here. All those water issues are just intensified here. I mean, like, 60 to 70% of the waterways in Iowa are just too polluted to go in. We are now the second highest cancer rate of any state in the country, and it's getting worse. That's what this model does. Mm-hmm. But what to do, I mean, don't... An undercurrent of my book, though, to be honest with you, is it takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about, you know, sure, there's a lot of votes to gut the farm bill was pushed for by Republicans, but it was President Clinton that signed it into law. It was Secretary Vilsack who's overseen more concentration in the meat markets these last 4 years. I mean, that is... There's a part of the Democrat Party, too, that, you know, played with fire here, and like I want to be very honest about it.
And I should mention, you have consulted and worked with Democratic campaigns in the past, and so you kind of see there, and I see it too. And I mean, I see it whether in from my perspective, it's the lack of of support to run DFL candidates in a lot of these communities, where you have people who are saying we need to wake up to this problem, and they're just not getting the support from the state parties. But as well, you're seeing it from the other side, where it's just, it's one thing to say we're going to rein in, fraud or, at least unfair governmental practices. But then it comes down to it and everyone's terrified of it.
Oh, totally. I mean, these are a lot of my barons. Like, take my dairy baron. Mm-hmm. They're basically feudal lords. I mean, they're the largest employer in the area. They have a lot of money to buy off the local elite. And you have those kind of Appalachia coal mining power dynamics kick in into these areas. And I mean, my frustration at this moment is you had such a bipartisan moment to reform the American meat markets, but Vilsack failed to do anything. I mean, Cargill got into the chicken industry. Walmart's made aggressive play into the beef industry, and you might not win rural America, but if you could outflank Republicans on, helping the rancher right now, doing something about meat markets, you would improve your margins. And like, that to me is like, I think in the food concentration space, you see one of the best examples of Biden's appointments and one of the worst, where Vilsack is arguably one of his worst local appointees. But on the flip side, the appointment of Lena Khan to be the chairwoman of the Federal Trade Commission is just incredible. I mean, this woman is filing all these antitrust lawsuits against big tech. She basically put a stop to that Kroger-Albertson merger. And then you had a story last week in the Wall Street Journal where Matt Gaetz just praised her. I mean, it's these weird moments in American politics where weird bedfellows come together, where meaningful things can happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we need that because, I mean, there was a story here in Minnesota of the mistreatment of immigrant workers by a farming industry. And as you talk about with the ability to buy off the locals, I mean, the local county prosecutors apparently didn't want anything to do with prosecuting them. Well, all of a sudden, even though they're kind of caught dead to rights doing some bad things, that there's no appetite locally to try to prosecute this, which basically creates that feudal system where there is no course of recourse for the local community against the wrongs of the corporation unless the federal government steps in.
Oh, totally. I mean, just I had that with my dairy baron. I discovered my dairy baron runs one of the largest tourist attractions in Indiana. You can come tour his industrial dairy. You can take a little train through it, a little bus. But, like, I discovered going through OSHA records, an undocumented worker died, got sucked into this manure pipe. And it took me 2 years. I mean, the county coroner was also the county funeral director. And he didn't want to ruffle feathers. And it took me a lot of some legal stuff to get those death records. And, I mean, I see why most people are just trying to get by right now. I mean, these people have real power, and they're scared. But then on the flip side, I mean, I have to go back to, Minnesota, where you have an incredible attorney general, Keith Ellison, doing real work in this space.
Yes.
I mean, he's going after industrial dairy really hard right now. There's that one up by St. Cloud that's just been incredibly exploitive where, I mean, it's almost like I mean, the pictures of how they were housing their workers was just barbaric.
That's the same story, yeah. And thank God for Keith Ellison to go after him, because, you know, it just, that's what we need. We need leadership. But we also need the information, and that's why your book is great. And I want to, if I don't care if you're in the metro or if you're in the country, for goodness sakes, buy a copy for everyone in the country. We need to get that out there. But they need to read this. They need to understand this. Austin Frerick, F-R-E-R-I-C-K, Barron's, Money, Power, and the Corruption of America's Food Industry. It talks about how we've gotten to this place, and yeah, obviously we got a lot to do, a lot to get out of this. Austin, congratulations on the book. All my best. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on.
My pleasure. Austin Frerick, we'll have him back on again in a heartbeat, in a freaking heartbeat, because that's a topic we have to talk about. Let's take a break, come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show.